how about some good news? How about how new technologies are making life better for the blind? We want to spend a few minutes on this topic today, and we start with a shopping trip.
I always schedule it so that I would call the grocery store and say, I'm coming, I need somebody to assist me in finding some grocery items.
But now, Brian Charlson can take a picture, and the phone will tell him what he's holding.
Cream of mushroom soup.
Cream of mushroom, perfect.
Double tap to edit.
No more grabbing chicken noodle when you want that cream of mushroom, or Cheerios when you want cornflakes. We wanted to find out what other new technologies are available for the blind, 1.3 million of them in the United States. And Brian Charlson is our guide. You can see a video of our shopping trip at hereandnow.org. But today he's brought a lot of gadgets here into the studio. He's director of computer training services at the Carroll Center for the Blind here in Newton, Massachusetts. And Brian, you say a lot of different technologies are converging on smartphones. The software we heard you use to identify your groceries is on a phone, and that's called Omobi. What does that do?
With Omobi, I can take a picture of the object. It compares it over the internet with a huge catalog of images and says, oh, this is Pepsi. Now that we know it's Pepsi, is it Diet Pepsi or regular Pepsi?
So isn't that something? How has this changed your life?
Well, a number of things. First off, I utilize a shopping service for maybe two-thirds of my grocery shopping called Peapod. Mm-hmm. And it gets delivered to my house in a dozen grocery bags piled up on the kitchen table. And then the guy says, thank you, sign here, and leaves. Now I've got some things that I can tell what they are by their shape, a loaf of bread or a carton of milk. But what happens if I've got a carton of milk and a carton of orange juice, mm-hmm. same shape and size? I'll line them up on my table, making sure there's nothing in the background, use the Omobi to take a picture and be able to tell what it is. Then I use a braille writer to braille up a label, slap it on the carton, and put it away.
Yeah. How much more independent are you because of that?
A great deal more independent than I used to be in that respect.
Quite something. And you've got on the table spread out in front of you four or five devices. They're all dark colored and different shapes. One looks a little more like an old-fashioned cell phone. This is your job at the Carroll Center to sift through the new technology.
Absolutely. So, it's every kind of thing imaginable. I can push this button and...
3:49 p.m.
A synthetic voice tells me the time. That's the clock me up in the morning. I can pick up this device, which is shaped something like a television remote control.
Right.
Turn it on. And point it at my shirt.
Bright gray. Pale slate gray.
And it tells me the color of my shirt.
Do it on your tie.
Ah, the tie is a different picture. So many other colors.
Murky gray brown.
Murky gray brown.
Beige,
going down a little farther.
Dark, lilac.
In my household, this allows me to put together outfits, but it also allows me to detect other things that are color-oriented. I might be in the office where the file folders are color-coded.
You just use that thing on it.
I use that thing on it.
And what about the things that people who are sighted are also using? iPods.
Heavens. That's the exciting part of things. My iPhone, in my briefcase here, I have a Dell laptop computer. I have a iPad that I use for reading books and the like, and I have my iPhone. I don't want people to think it's all I this and I that. Although, at this moment in time, they're the leaders in terms of accessibility without me having to pay extra for that accessibility or without having to go for a blindness-only product, which almost always means that the product is more expensive than you would expect it to be. That color identifier, for example, is $350.
That's expensive.
This other device, which is called the Victor Reader Stream, and it does a number of really excellent things.
What's it called?
It's called the Victor Reader Stream.
Uh-huh.
It is an iPod-like device in that it plays back digitally recorded information. It also, however, has a built-in speech synthesizer that means that I can put electronic texts on it, like a Word document, and that synthesized voice will read it for me.
And let me describe it. It's much fatter than an iPhone. It looks like an old-fashioned mobile phone when they first came out. It's quite thick.
It's a chunky kind of thing, absolutely. Yeah. This is also my digital recorder. So I can hold down this button.
Start recording.
And make a brief note. Don't forget to bring home milk tonight when you get off work,
mm-hmm.
and then be able to take notes for myself that way.
Recording.
In the old days when we used to use, God, I can't believe I'm saying old days, cassette recorders.
Right.
To find anything required that I fast forward or rewind Now it's left arrow, right arrow to jump back and forth quickly through things.
Well, that's the old technology. And that how expensive is that?
This is about $330 for this.
So what does the iPhone do that's
the
different?
The iPhone is, again, another leap forward in terms of that whole convergence. First off, this iPhone I bought at the Apple store. I didn't have to go to a blindness-related online catalog. I then had them go to the settings menu and click one choice called VoiceOver. And the minute they did that, this phone was totally usable by me. When I turn it on,
3:53.
You hear a voice tell me what the time is. I stroke forward on the touch screen.
Tuesday. Slide to unlock.
It says slide or double tap. I double tap, so I'm tapping it two times.
Mail. 13 new items.
All of this I'm doing as a blind person using a touch screen, both because this has speech that I can turn on, and along with that speech being turned on, a different set of controls for touching the screen called gesture controls are invoked that allow me
closing ID tool, Sendero GPS,
to be able to go through a bunch of different things without accidentally activating them.
Hmm.
And I'm going to go to an application.
Settings.
You're just skimming across.
All I'm doing is doing what they call flicking in the manuals. But flicking here means previous or next. I'm not worrying about whether something is higher up the screen or lower down the screen. It's either next in order or previous in order.
Mm-hmm.
iBooks.
Double tap to open.
This is so exciting to me. I love to read. I read about 120 books or so a year. And when I say read, some of those I'm reading in Braille. You can imagine me sitting in my living room with a big Braille book in my lap. I just got Joy of Cooking in Braille. 30 volumes of Braille, 12 inches by 12 inches by 4 inches thick. It took an entire bookcase for one cookbook. But with this, iBooks is a mainstream service.
iBooks, library, button.
Search.
Bookmarks.
Bookmarks
button.
And?
Preface Chapter 7 teaches you how to add social course material, such as chat.
And it's reading forms, using synthetic voice,
course,
a book that only exists
bookmarks,
in e-text. But I was able to buy that book that was published 3 weeks ago.
Hmm.
As opposed to if I wanted to read this in Braille, it would take somewhere between 9 and 12 months for the process of converting it from a standard format to a blindness-specific format.
So that saves you a lot of time and money. Brian Charlson is with us. He's Director of Computer Training Services at the Carroll Center for the Blind in Newton, Massachusetts. And Brian, we've been talking about how you're able to use technology that isn't specific to blind people. Smartphones, for instance, giving you more options. But you still use a fair number of so-called blind-specific products. You have one for sorting bills?
Here's an example of one that everybody can identify. I'm reaching into my pocket. I got changed this morning when I convinced a friend to stop by McDonald's on the way into work.
Mm-hmm.
And she just handed me my change back as a wad of bills.
So you've got a bill
all
right in front of you.
These bills in the United States are the same size and shape. There's no way a blind person can tell one from another. This is unlike all other industrialized nations in the world. We blind people, though, challenged the U.S. Department of the Treasury, and they're now being forced to, as they issue new bills, put some kind of identifying textual marking on it so I can tell. But until then, I have the iBill reader. This is something about the size of a box of matches. I'm going to take this bill and slide one end into a slot,
mm-hmm.
push a button,
five.
And it tells me that's a $5 bill.
How cool.
That's cool both for me personally, but also think of all the jobs that require that you be able to tell one piece of currency from another. Any retail job. But of all of the blind people in Massachusetts, by the way, there's an estimated 40,000 blind people in Massachusetts alone. Of all of them, maybe three dozen have one of these.
Hmm.
They just don't know they exist. Then, after you get the fact that it exists, you have to deal with how you're going to afford it. This one-purpose device cost $120, and this cost $350, and this cost $350.
Right, you're showing all the different devices.
I mean, all these different devices on the table, I've got about $1,000 worth of things on the table. And most blind and visually impaired people of employment age are unemployed. What here in Massachusetts is slightly less than 10% for the general populace. For the blind, it's 70%. 70% unemployment. So accessibility is great, but you got to be able to afford it.
Well, and it seems as if one of the things that's happening is that as more and more of this kind of technology is made for the sighted, yeah, you're picking
exactly.
up your iPhone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My iPhone is here again. I'm going back this way.
Flicking, flicking, flicking.
And I'm going forward to
Sendero GPS.
Can you imagine how valuable GPS would be for a blind person? When walking down the street to know where you are, you're forever looking at landmarks and signs to tell where you are. I, as a blind person, you know, the landmarks, I got to touch them to know they're there. So I simply memorize how many streets down I have to go crossing before I need to make my next left or right turn. And if I'm distracted and miscount, I'll be a block off and have to deal with a number of other issues. Here with GPS, I can ask it to tell me where I am at any time. The GPS product that I had before this one cost $1,200. Mm. Then I went online and found a GPS product as an app on my iPhone, and it cost me $18.
How about that?
$18.
You know, you said something. Do you really think that this technology, you mentioned the 70% unemployment rate for the blind just here in Massachusetts. I'm sure it's around the same across the country. Do you really think that, you know, this technology, an iPhone with the GPS or something that can tell you what kind of bill you have, do you think that's going to help the blind get jobs?
In small incremental ways. Just that many fewer barriers to that job, whether it's a retail job or a job that requires that you balance a spreadsheet. All of those jobs are doable utilizing technology. They frequently require, though, that the employer believes that they exist and that they are usable by a blind person. If I walked into most offices that had an opening for a job that required that you use Excel, and a blind person sat across the table and said, I can do that, I have a harder sell than if a sighted person said I could do that. Partly because the employer is saying to themselves, you know, if I had my eyes closed, I couldn't do my job. I can't imagine how I could do my job. Where we work at the Carroll Center with so many blind and visually impaired people over time, we know that we can train them to do those jobs, and then we send them out and assist them in trying to find employers who are willing to listen to the fact that they can do that. I have a friend right now at the Carroll Center, a good friend of mine, who's worked for a major corporation for 30 years, and he's recently lost enough vision that to see something, he needs it magnified 12 times. He's done his job all of his life using the Excel spreadsheet program.
Right.
He crunches numbers for a living. So he's learning now how to do it with this type of speech technology that I use. Now he's going to have to go back to his employer and convince his employer that I can't do it visually anymore, but I can do it orally, or if you will, by way of this synthetic speech. And I can probably do it as well as I used to, differently, but as well.
How much of the technology that you do have that's helping, the iPhone, for instance, how much do you have that access because of the law that was passed just recently? It's the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, and it was supposed to allow people with disabilities full access to print, television, the internet. Has that changed? You know,
it is starting to make the change. Some of the examples of what we are already starting to see is better posting of those crawler messages across the bottom of the TV in case of emergency. Here in Massachusetts, over the past couple of years, we had that big water main break that resulted in a boil order for water. The first place where that information made it into households is through crawler messages at the bottom of the TV screens,
right,
none of which were spoken. And many, many blind people were drinking water without it being properly cleaned. Or my friends were most concerned because they were giving water to their guide dogs and didn't know that they were potentially hurting their dogs. So this law requires that those be spoken as well as written across the bottom of the screen.
I want to ask you about that because you've told us about technology that MIT is developing that would give in-depth descriptions, almost setting the scene. What's this?
That's exciting. It is possible for a person to wear a vest or something along those lines, under a jacket or whatever, be able to walk into a room and have it with sensors, scope out the room. And it can tell me, this room is 10 feet by 20 feet with a 12-foot ceiling. There are windows on the left, a conference table in the middle with six chairs around it. Through object recognition, that's not so much in the computer that you're wearing, but available like Omobi's database out there on the cloud called the Internet. Wouldn't it be wonderful to walk into a conference room and be able to know where the empty chair is?
Yeah.
Something that you take for granted, which I have a hard time slipping in late to a meeting. So I'm the guy who arrives first in order to avoid that kind of fuss and feathers as I first come in. So this idea of putting that together changes how I go through just regular everyday things.
Yeah.
Once this is in a wearable thing, I should be able to use my hand as the cursor, point at what I want to know, and say, what's this?
Yeah.
And it will take a picture from that picture, determine what it is, and relay that information back to me pretty quickly. That might seem like a very small thing, but in a universe that's full of labels, it will dramatically increase my ability to be independent. And in the marketplace, competitive. And in the classroom, fully integrated.
That's Brian Charleston, Director of Computer Training Services at the Carroll Center for the Blind in Newton, Massachusetts, telling us about new technologies making his life and others easier. Thank you so much. What fun. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.